Jeffrey, this question came in, how do I get a deeper knowledge of where to find money for special projects and how to get into corporate art sales?
Question. I like that deeper knowledge. I've been kind of pondering what that means exactly. What I'm seeing here is two questions in one. First of all, this is special projects. Now, special projects could cover a variety of things, but the way that I'm finding out about special projects right now myself is through my artist network.
And, through what?
It is through listening to my artist network. In other words, I talk to artists all around the country, and basically we talk about the business of art, and we talk about what projects are going on, what artists are doing. We're all trying to make a living at it, so we're all giving each other kind of tips as to what's going on. Recently in Santa Fe, our convention center put out a call for entry for artists to purchase. I heard about that originally from an artist in my network. Then later on, it did appear in my local newspaper. So going on from your artist network, then you're going to go to more traditional means, things like newspapers, magazines, websites. A really, really critical one for artists, which I'm always amazed that they're not involved with, is their local and state arts associations. And they're all on the internet now. I mean, you can get their listings. In Denver, of course, there's Westaff, which produces this terrific newsletter once a month, calls for entry all around the country for various projects, things like that. So start locally, obviously go regionally, and you're going to go nationally. You just can't help it, but start locally. So for the special projects, you've got to have that really important network, both virtual on the internet and traditional, by communicating with other practicing artists. Now, don't forget about the artists that are legends in their own minds. They're the people that actually take us nowhere, and then later on we get frustrated. Make sure and surround yourself by successful artists or ambitious artists. Now, number two is how to get into corporate art sales. I can just tell you a story for myself. Recently, I create sculptures, and so I decided I was going to see if I could get a corporate art consultant to handle my work. I researched 30 of them on the internet. This is all done on the internet, just researching. I came up with 30. 20 of them were appropriate. In other words, they took the type of imagery that I was creating. I emailed all 20 of them. I think I physically spoke to 10 of them. One of them I have started a dialogue with, and they're really, really interested in my work. Now, that all probably took me 2 hours to do that particular project of corporate art sales. Now, also there are traditional things like theguild.com. For anybody that gets that book or is involved with the Guild.
Wait, they have Jeffrey, slow down. Say that again. What.com?
The Guild. Theguild.com.
Okay.
They have a list of art consultants in the back, probably about 200 of the books that they publish. So there's a more kind of a traditional way to track down art consultants. There are hundreds and hundreds of art consultants all around the United States.
And art consultants are those people who are interfacing with the corporate world?
Exactly, but both residential and corporate. But art consultants, now art consultants, the term is pretty broad. I mean, in the old days we'd call them designers, things like that. But art consultants can also be architects, they can be designers, they can be framers, they can be... There's a wide variety of people that are basically influencing how art is purchased.
And you're going to be going into that in more detail next week.
Exactly, with my class.
Great, great. Fantastic. Thank you, Jeffrey. That's really helpful. Molly, here's another one for you. This one had an attitude attached to it, so I couldn't resist giving it to you. Things were capitalized, and, you know, so here's the question. It comes with a little commentary first. I have never seen or read a marketing or daily plan written by a mid-career fine artist, and I have looked and asked. I am friggin' frustrated that no models are presented to us. We need something that is realistic and real world. Every other industry and profession has business plans to study. Why don't we?
Well, I'm just thinking that if I were a mid-career fine artist who was making plenty of money and having lots of fun selling my art, why on earth would I write a marketing plan? Number one. Number two, art, whether you're an architect, a coach, a virtual assistant, a massage therapist, a sculptor, an editor, or a car washer. The basics for a business plan don't vary a great deal. What gets in our way, what's always gotten in my way, whether it was selling artwork or marketing my coaching services or my writing, is when I read a business plan for a pizza store and I think that doesn't apply to me. Instead, what I've learned to do is look at it and say, and ask myself specifically, what is it about this that doesn't apply to me? Well, I don't sell pizzas. Okay, what do I sell? Fill in the blank. I don't have menus. Okay, what does a menu do for a pizza place? It tells people what's available. How could I do that for my work? Use what's out there. There is nothing new under the sun about selling or marketing or PR, and there are plenty of good books out there, not hundreds, which is great, but plenty. Carol Michael's book, Ariane's book. We've heard books by some other folks on this telesummit. You don't need a book that hasn't been written. What you need to do is find a book and make it work for you. And then when you're a successful mid-career artist, you can write the book you want.
All right. Thanks, Holly.
Your attitude.
Really? Okay, great. Jeffrey, another one for you. This artist said, this question may be naive, but people who collect art, who are they and where do you find them?
Oh, boy. I mean, that's the golden egg, right? That's what every one of us is looking for. And that's the most difficult part of this formula. That one thing I found is some of the people that buy the most art are other artists. I am involved with an artist group in Santa Fe, and there are probably 100 artists involved in it. And one of the goals, and every week somebody else does a presentation on their art, and one of my goals before I got there was I was going to sell somebody in that group a piece of my art while and during my presentation. And I'm knocking on Formica right now. I sold a pretty substantial sculpture to one of those people. They're everywhere, and I think you need tools, though, to help you to pitch to them. In other words, I think the easiest tool that an artist has to convince their clients that they're serious is a business card with an image on it. The other thing I found in hanging out with Judy Chicago, the well-known artist, is everybody she met, she gave them a business card. It was amazing. Here's a woman who's already in the history books. She was so passionate about her work that everybody from a taxi cab driver to, we were in Washington and D.C., and everybody, she told them what she did. She gave them a business card. She was so passionate about it. And it's amazing how many people out there you can get excited about what you're doing. So buyers and collectors and people interested in art are all around us. What they're waiting to do is tap into our excitement and our passion. So I believe the sky's the limit.
Oh, Jeffrey, I am so excited that you said this because it has been my experience. I remember going to Staples one time to the copy place, and I was printing something for the artist book, and this person who's doing the copying looks up and says to me, I'm an artist. What the artists forget is how truly exciting the idea of an artist is to other people.
Yeah,
it has this kind of magical quality of, oh, my goodness, there's somebody who creates, comes from their heart, does what they love, and it really fuels people's desire in themselves for that, and they've got a golden opportunity to step in with that.
Our job is to tap into that and then project that to other people. And the artist statement and a lot of these things are teaching us how to be really passionate about our artistic voice.
Mm, yes. Allison, here's one for you. This artist said, I would like to make good use of my time in learning how to get my art out in the public arena. I feel my art and I have outgrown art clubs, hanging my art in libraries, sidewalk shows, fairs, restaurants, banks, and any other one-shot presentation. What's next?
Wow. Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge this artist that they have realized that it's time to move on, because not everyone recognizes that there comes a point when it's time to move on. And it's funny because just this week I had posted an entry on my blog about the art world hierarchy, which of course can exist in many different fashions, but I posted one particular one, always encouraging artists to know the next step. But I can't actually say what the next step is for this artist without knowing a lot more information. Mm-hmm. Everyone's path is different, and I think that's so important for artists to recognize. Yeah, you can look at someone else's marketing plan to get ideas, but until you, as other people have said today, know your vision, know where you want to be and where you want to end up, you don't know what your path is yet. So because I see two different things in this question, I'm going to focus on the making good of use, the good use of time part of the question. Mm. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. So
that's the beauty of this panel is you all are coming from such fantastically different perspectives and the richness of that. So please, yes, go where you want to with it.
So I'm going to return to what appears to be my theme for the day, and you're going to hear it again when I tell a very specific story next Wednesday in my presentation. It's also in my book as well. But earlier I said that building a support group was one of the two concrete steps I would encourage artists to take toward getting exposure, and I'm going to reiterate that, that in order to get your art exposure, you have to expose yourself. So being thoroughly connected to a community will lead to new connections and opportunities that you never knew existed before. Jeffrey just said this when he was talking about how important his artist connections were. And this is so important. So get your website in shape, get your blog well greased, but don't ignore the personal touch. As we all know, art in the real world has a much more special presence than art online. That can be your portfolio, but you really need to get out there and connect with people. So go beyond the art club and get involved in art organizations, but only those that serve you well. If they don't serve you, they're a waste of time. If you're above, not above, but if you have different goals than the other people there, they're a waste of your time. So get out. Get out of the studio, get out and have coffee or lunch with a different artist every week, and don't forget to attend openings, exhibits, and lectures. As Jeffrey said, join your arts councils, your arts commissions, and get involved with them. Don't just join them, but get involved. This community building is a terrific use of your time, and I'm certain that once you have this community in place, your next steps will become perfectly clear.
Thank you, Allison. This is connects really beautifully yesterday when somebody commented on the fact that somebody was saying, the rest of my life gets in the way of my art. And the response was, no. The rest of your life feeds your art.
Yes.
And so
yes, artists have always been connected with the world.
Exactly. Yeah. And so thinking when you're not in your studio, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not working on your art. It just means you're doing it in a different arena.
Right. Great. I listened to that yesterday, too, and was struck by that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Michael, Bungie Stanier, here's one for you. This is a bit of a long one here. Recently, I've had a problem setting goals because it seems I'm spread a bit thin. I have a small eBay business through my blog, but the pricing here can interfere with my other work because I can't advertise my eBay business to my few higher-priced clients. I'd like to pull back from eBay and put my efforts into higher-priced work and set goals for high-end clients, but I need cash flow that eBay provides. I'm pretty good at setting goals and going for it, but it seems my lack of clarity over the past 2 years has put me in a loop, and I'm getting nowhere fast. Any suggestions?
Great question. And, you know, in the session that I'm running next week, part of what I'm talking about is what is a business model and how can you steal ideas for your business model from all the successful businesses that are operating around you. I mean, Molly said in her answer, you know, a business plan for a pizza joint will tell you something about a business plan for you. And I really think that's true. And so here's what I would do if I had this dilemma, because what I see here is you need two different business models and, in fact, two different brands, because you're trying to sell two different products to two different people. You have a lower-end product that you're trying to sell through your blog and your blog readers and through eBay, and you've got a higher-end product that you're using to target a different type of market. So the inspiration I would point you to here is Gap. So Gap has, well, the Gap, Gap has three brands, Old Navy, The Gap, and Banana Republic. And they sell similar but different clothing, and they sell it at different price points, and they sell it to a different audience. So if I was in this situation, I would be getting clear that I've got a blog and an eBay, and I sell a certain type of product through that, and I would keep it going, because if you have cash flow, embrace it. It is a fine thing. You know, somebody mentioned the curse of the starving artist, and you know, I'm a big believer is you want to find ways to bring the money in, and that allows you to experiment in new areas and places to drive your business. So keep that, and while you're doing that, find a separate and different way to market your higher-end products to a different group of people. It might be a different blog. It might be a different website. It might be a different brand. It might be all of those things. And use that as a way of splitting yourself so that you have two different brands. One final example, I have two different brands in the marketplace, and you can see an example of how I do things differently. I have Box of Crayons, and Box of Crayons is my corporate brand, and my website there is boxofcrayons.biz. That has a certain feel, a certain look, and a certain offer of certain types of products. And then I have a website called possibilityvirus.com, which sells different types of products to a different type of market. And I manage those completely separate. There's almost no overlap between them at all.
And folks, there you just got a good example of how you can promote yourself at the same time of answering a question. I think it's really important. I didn't mean that in any kind of spurious way at all. I just think it was beautiful the way you wove that in. And that, artist, is one of the ways that you have to learn to think about feeling strong enough about what you do that you weave it in just naturally, like Michael just did. Joan, here's another one for you. What are some effective ways I can promote my work in the least amount of time?
Oh, I think that's a hard one.
And yeah, that's why I gave it to you.
I think you promote online.
Uh-huh.
I think you promote online by doing several of the things that I talked about before. And I'll just tick off a couple ones, certainly with YouTube videos. Here's another one. Write press releases on a regular basis about what you're doing and post those press releases online through preferably through press release distribution sites. I think the two best sites are PR Web. It'll cost you $80 per release, or go on to expertclick.com. Expertclick.com, it's the yearbook of experts. They have a service. It's pretty pricey. It's about $1,000. It gets you into the experts database, and it also lets you post 52 press releases a year. That's one a week. The big advantage to posting press releases online is that they live online forever, and they pull tons of traffic back to your website. If I were an artist, I would go the YouTube route.
Okay.
And start posting videos to YouTube about your artwork. And I just want to say quickly, one of the other experts mentioned it within the last hour, that artists should be willing to send images of their artwork to other people. And I see this as a problem with a lot of artists. I always want to put images of artist artwork, artists who I write about, in my newsletter and my blog. I would love a little image of their artwork to put it in my blog. When I blog about them, they don't want to part with those images because they think somebody's going to steal the idea. And so many artists, I think, are so overprotective of what they do. I want to see what the art looks like.
Yes,
my readers
absolutely
want to see what it looks like. And if it looks terrific, they're going to click through to your website to find out where they can buy it.
Right, right. Yes, that is definitely one of the bugaboos of the Internet, is this feeling, because some artists have found their work taken and used in ways they don't want it to be used. So it is a double-edged sword. It's very interesting. But I agree with you. I think it's one you have to just take in stride, because the risk of something being stolen is negligible compared to the risk of your art never being seen.
I agree. Yep.
Jeffrey, here's another one for you. What activities, this artist asks, could I do quickly that would have immediate positive consequences in terms of increasing my art income as well as the potential for long-term development of a profitable art career?
I would say produce the most unique, fresh, exciting, accessible work that you can. So often in coaching artists, it comes back to the work. The work, I don't care what niche, what you're trying to do. Artist, as scientist, as entrepreneur, as whatever metaphor we might use, often the biggest mistake is the work doesn't have any energy to it. I'm finding again and again and again those artists that I run into that are creating work that's so dynamic, there's really no stopping them. So I think each one of us has this job where we have to constantly be going back and looking at our work, and we're listening to artists, we're listening to gallery dealers, we're listening to museum curators, we're listening, and we're getting feedback on our work, and if people can't remember our work, and if it's not sparking exciting emotions, if it's not getting the passion in other people, then I think you can do all the marketing in the world if you want to, but if the work isn't exciting, it's not going to go anywhere. So I really, really believe that we have to go back there, and we really have to tap into ourselves, and we really have to find that vision within each of us. And because an artist is an expert, what they do, they have to be an expert about, and other people are looking to surround themselves by artists that they believe are experts at what they're doing, and it all starts with the work. So I'd say go back into the studio and paint and paint and paint and paint and create the best work you can.
And I want to piggyback off of that, because one of the things I've seen that breaks my heart is how many artists are doing work at a level that their friends like and their families like, and everybody's telling them, oh, you should do something more with this. But they're not looking at the larger picture of how much this is going to move somebody who doesn't know them at all.
Yeah, a lot of artists use the friends and family as the jumping stone, and sometimes that's so protective that it actually has nothing to do with the big world.
Yes, and I mean sometimes it's useful, but it often doesn't segue into that larger piece of, if somebody doesn't know you, are they going to walk up to what you do and be moved in some way, in some direction, at some level? Because if that doesn't happen, if your pretty flower looks like every other pretty flower out there, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, so many arts professionals I speak to, they use the word unique. They say, is the work unique that they're going to be sending me?
Say that again?
The word unique. I mean, art people that are looking at art, they really want a sense that this person is on a really new track.
Yes,
and
yes.
And they want the work to be unique and fresh.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm really glad you've brought that out of the closet. It's so important. Molly, another one for you. This one says, I want to create more art, but three things hold me back: my time restrictions, lack of energy, and my fear and anxiety that since I have never shown my art and I don't have a resume, no one will want to show my art. Where do I start?
Okay. You want to, as you know, I'm a big fan of the work of Byron Katie, and after hearing about the time, energy, and fear, what comes to me is you want to create more art. Is that true? So one response is to really get honest with yourself. Sometimes as artists, we can get into a kind of production mindset. It's ironic. We regard ourselves as being driven by aesthetics and higher values, and yet we get into this make, 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 create, create, create mode. Look at what it is you're making. Are you creating things in production? Then look at how to streamline those processes, how to improve them. Are you creating individual works of art? Then create them one at a time with the time and energy you have. And if you want your art to be seen, and I hear that you do, then part of your job as an artist is to follow some of the suggestions you've heard today and maybe give 3 hours a week to developing ways for your art to be seen. You want to have a baby, fine. You want to have another baby, but you don't want to get up in the middle of the night for feedings? Well, think again. So, again, I don't mean to be harsh. It's not about being harsh. It's about being realistic and realizing that reality is kind. You actually don't have a problem. You create as much art as you have the time and energy for. Why on earth would you create more than that? And the fear that you won't be shown has a simple solution. Take the time and energy you're spending on fear and see who can help you get shown. It's simple, it's not easy, and you can do it.
Thanks so much, Molly. Michael Woodward, here's the last one of the two-minute challenges. This artist says, I have been financially successful as a decorative artist, and it's hard to give up that security. But I'm worried that my decorative art success will brand me, so it will be harder to earn the respect and pay of a fine artist, which is what I really want. Any thoughts?
Yeah, this is a good one, because I have this problem with artists, you know, quite often. The other way around, when they want, they're in the fine art business and they have a gallery that's selling originals for a few thousand dollars or limited editions for $1,500, and they want to get into licensing, which is more mass market. So this works both ways. And one way which I use, and I think this is for this particular person a possibility, is to use a pseudonym for the decorative work. But if she's got that out there already, that might be impossible. So what you do is create a pseudonym for the fine artwork, so vice versa. And the problem arises because there's an elitist attitude in many areas of the fine art market, and which will always be there. Many high-end galleries don't want their artists published in the mass market. They feel it distracts or detracts from their market, in a way which somehow cheapens it. It's not always true. In one of my lectures, I give Jack Vetriano as a major English artist, and he's sold over 1 million posters. You've seen it's called the Singing Butler piece. And, you know, I give this an example that mass marketing doesn't necessarily mean it degrades the art. And I asked the audience how much you think that the original went for of this mass-produced piece of art that's on calendars and greetings cards and posters all over the world. And the answer was, you know, maybe 50,000, 100,000. Anyway, it was $1.3 million. So there's a bit of a misnomer about mass marketing. Although every case is totally different, the thing to do is really, if you've got this snobbery that's going on and you have a problem, then create two names. Run one name for the fine art, one name for the decorative art. Particularly with fine artists, it's easy. They've got a name in the fine art business and they've got gallery representation. If it's going to upset the galleries and it's going to upset the collectors to have the artist doing work for Target, for example, then just create a pseudonym and operate under that name. So in other words, like I think it was Michael Bungay, it's all about creating a brand. So you create a new name, and that's your brand in the marketplace. And you're known for that for the rest of eternity. You've just created a pseudonym. You know, authors do it, so why not artists?
Great. Great. Excellent, Michael. Thank you so much. Listen, if you've joined us a bit late, you are on the call for panel day 2 of the Smartest Telesummit 2008, and we're just getting ready to segue into our last section of the day called the hot seat. Here is this artist's story. I go to art school in the evening, where I just completed my second year. I work full-time for a U.S. company. As a foreign resident, my visa depends on this, and I spend any free time doing artwork and homework. I barely have time for family, fitness, recreation, or relaxing. My biggest challenge is transitioning from a full-time fundraising career to an art career. I want to establish a secure financial backup for the transitioning time it will take me to become a more established artist, but I don't know how to assess this. Also, the large amount of money I make in my day job has added a new fear to my list, that I won't be able to make as much with my art career. Oh, I just thought this one had such juicy places in it, and I'm really curious to see the different ways each one of you are going to go with this one. Molly, you want to take the reins on it first?
Wow. Well, of course, it reminds me of Golden Handcuffs, which is a situation many top-level managers and executives and well-paid professionals face, whether or not they're artists. One thing I would do here is look at the book, get the book, Your Money or Your Life, by Vicki Robin and Joe Dominguez. I would look at the costs of work. When we work and have children and have lives, we spend generally a tremendous amount of money just keeping that whole thing afloat. It's the newspaper, the lunch, the latte. So find out what you're really earning now. It's going to be a lot less than you think. Get realistic about not how to replace your current income, but what income would allow your family to live comfortably and happily and have the freedom to do the things that are most important for it while you paint. If you're happy painting or whatever your art is, you're almost certain to find that your lifestyle can cost much, much less and be much, much more satisfying. This doesn't mean you have to settle for less, but it lets you find a platform that will allow you to make the transition sooner. So that's where I would go first.
Okay, Molly. Great, thank you. Michael, you're on. Michael Woodward.
Okay. It's a tough one, this, and I gave this quite some thought. You know, it's a fact that it takes a while to establish an income in the art field, whether it's licensing, selling originals, or a combination of both. And it's volatile, unlike a regular job with a regular income. So one way, apart from working part-time, is to have a couple of years' income put by as a safety net, if that was possible. It's one way of keeping some security. The other way is to, if you've got a large overhead, you know, mortgage, et cetera, reduce it so that, you know, try and reduce your expenses. I mean, CPAs tell you that it takes 3 years to establish a business, so you've got to be prepared for a lean time in the early stages until you can establish yourself. If this person's fearful now that they won't make enough money, then that's going to come true. If you're serious about making a career in art, then you must go into it with a positive attitude that you're going to succeed. Or you're setting yourself up for failure right from the beginning. You get what you think. So dismiss failure from your mind. That's the first thing. Fear simply stops people in any walk of life from following their passion. So if art is this person's passion, then find a way. I mean, basically, you need food, you need shelter, and that's all you have to do. You know, you can do without a few luxuries. But I believe at the end of the day, following your passion will ensure that you stay happy. And that, to me, is a key thing. So we could talk for hours about this, but that's, to me, what it's all about, is this person seems to want to get into the art business. So if that's her passion, then, you know, she'll be happy if she follows that and unhappy if she doesn't.
Great. Thank you so much, Michael. Allison, you want to pick this one up? I'm dying to hear what you're going to say. Hello?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I apologize. Can you hear me now?
Oh, hi.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, 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 I can.
I'm sorry, I had muted myself, so in case I coughed or something. Anyway, I had this whole answer formulated, and I was listening to Molly and Michael, and I just thought of something else, so I may go a different direction, but I agree that you should have those, you know, yay, applaud this artist for knowing that he needs or she needs security and that the 2 or 3 year reserve is key. It's very important. It's something I didn't do and was a really, really bad mistake. But I want to mention something that I don't think anyone else will mention, and I'm kind of going to go out on a limb here, and that is the notion of sacrifice. And I'm thinking, I'm coming at this from my art history background and knowing what artists of the past have done for their art. And that, those are artists that had grown up in an art system, art schools, and so forth. And there are so many artists today, perhaps like this artist who is taking on art as a second career and hasn't sacrificed like artists of the past have. And I don't know where that really fits in with this artist's life, and I don't know... I don't know if it's valid to bring it up, but I'm going to bring it up anyway because there are a lot of artists out there who are competition, like to think of it that way or not, who are sacrificing a lot for their art. They're getting up at 4 a.m. to paint before they go to work, or they're, staying up all hours of the night to paint because they can't do it while their kids are up. And I'm just mentioning that because that's your competition. And I'm not saying that you have to do that, but I'm mentioning it because other artists are doing it. And when you are doing that, even though you have this great full-time job right now, and if you can eventually transition out, you still should be and can be doing things in the meantime to promote your art. Doing mailings, making sure everyone around you knows you're an artist. Getting your art out there in just small ways if you have to, so that when you're ready to make a bigger jump, that you already have those kind of steps in place and
great.
The sacrifices are a little less.
Thank you so much, Allison. I don't mean to push on people here, but we are actually going to be running out of time. So I'm going to fly through the next three, and then I have a very short ending thing. I need to wrap it up. Michael Bungie-Stainer, you want to address this for us?
Sure. I think I'll do it quickly. One of the questions is to ask yourself, how much is enough? How much do you need? Because often people who are stuck in this, but I'm earning this amount, I don't know if I can make the leap, just aren't clear yet how much they really need. So getting clear on that will help make the decision. Secondly, I'd endorse what people have said, that it takes the other year at a coaching conference, somebody said it takes 2 years to grow a coaching business. The best way to do that is you do it while you are maintaining your day job. Don't give it up, because that keeps the revenue coming, but it requires sacrifice. It requires you carving out time to do this, and it's a choice you have. Is this important enough for you to carve out separately? What I wouldn't do is give up the day job and take the leap to the artist and hope you're going to make it, because that is has risk and fear and can be a paralyzing thing to do.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael. Joan.
I'm glad you're running out of time, because I don't have a lot to offer. This was a very difficult question, and I don't think the person who submitted the question gave enough information. I don't know if this person is married. I don't know if they have a second income that they could fall back on. I don't know if they have a savings account to rely on. So my advice is what other people have said, don't quit your day job. Secondly, read the book, do what you love, and the money will follow. I read that book before after I quit my high-paying newspaper editor job 13 years ago and ventured off into this scary wilderness. And I absolutely was determined to start my own business. I knew I was in it for the long haul, and I told myself that failure is not an option. I read that book, and it helped me stick with it. And today,
great.
I make more than I made in my last newspaper job, and the highest paying job that I ever had. And it has taken 12, 13 years of hard work, living from hand to mouth, clipping coupons from newspapers, shopping at Goodwill. And I got to tell you, today, I still clip coupons and shop at Goodwill.
Okay, great, Joan. Thank you. That's a good reality check, people. It does take time. Jeffrey, you want to grab this one? You got about 30 seconds.
I don't have a lot to say. First of all, I don't think you need to be going to art school. Second of all, I think art is a passion. It's not a career. And the artists that I see succeed are not doing it as a business. They're doing it because they actually can't do anything else. So just a couple of things to think about.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Molly, Michaels 1 and 2, Allison, Joan, Jeffrey. You have given us so much to ponder, and we are all grateful. This brings us to the end of day 2. On Monday, we begin the 5 days of our keynote presentations. Look for reminders in your inbox. And if you haven't checked out your SmartWorks form on the Inside Resource pages yet, please do so. Your fellow Smartists are very active there, and there are some lively discussions going on. Join them. Start one of your own. And if you have questions, comments, or especially concerns, please email me at info@smartest-telesummit.com and learn what Smartest is up to by visiting www.smartest-telesummit.com. Smartest is S-M-Artist, A-R-T-I-S-T, Tele, T-E-L-E, S-U-M-M-I-T. So, artists, one and all, this is the year for you to get your art career up and flying. And I wish each one of you prosperity and continued creative flow. Until I see you on Monday, goodbye, and thank you, panel.